Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim, we've got good, bad, crazy martinis as usual, and the good martini relates to some very bad behavior, but it's good to see that the residents of San Diego are seeing things the right way, it would appear. We've talked before in this program about San Diego Mayor and former longtime California Congressman Bob Filner, who was actually chairman of the House Veterans Committee at one point. He's been accused of sexual harassment now by an ever-growing list of women. As you point out in the jolt, he chalks it all up to him being a big hugger, and apparently that's being misunderstood. But it's not being misunderstood much by the residents of San Diego. Here's local affiliate ABC 10 explaining the results of their latest poll on this issue.
We asked 700 people, based on what you know, should Bob Filner remain in office or should he resign? 69% said the mayor should resign. 24% said he should stay in office. 8% weren't sure.
And as you also point out in the jolt today, Jim, prominent California female Democrats, Pelosi, Boxer, Feinstein, not necessarily saying he has to go, but certainly not offering much of a defense for Filner.
I believe it was the legendary anchorman Ron Burgundy who used the sign-off line, "You stay classy, San Diego." And these poll results suggest that, yes, San Diego is staying classy. It's way too classy a city to have a mayor like Bob Filner. It is delightful to see genuine political consequences for what appears to be reprehensible behavior. There's always the possibility of false accusations and, you know, the possibility that somebody's, you know, everyone deserves a, the right to kind of cross-examine their accuser when they're accused of a crime. In the case of Filner, it becomes less and less plausible with each additional accuser. People who have been longtime allies of him, worked for him for a long time, coming out and saying that he had done these sorts of things. Tougher and tougher to believe this is all just an innocent misunderstanding over him being a big hugger. A very quiet bit of applause for Pelosi, Boxer, and Feinstein for finally recognizing that they had to say something about this. That if he was a Republican, clearly they would have been screaming from the rooftops from, you know, the first moment of this. It is kind of strange how, I mean, Pelosi had initially said what happens in San Diego is the business of the people of San Diego, explicitly not judging. By the way, that slogan sounded a little too much like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, not the connotation you want to get when it comes to, you know, horrible sexual harassment. And Boxer and Feinstein really had, you know, avoided making any comment. You'd think that, you know, they'd have something to say about this. Like a switch gets flicked and all of a sudden it becomes okay to criticize this guy. Now, the San Francisco Chronicle basically looked at the text of these, I would say, you know, mildly, generically critical, public, you know, issued statements from Feinstein and Boxer, and they see this as between the lines, get out, your toast, you scum-sucking pig. I mean, they really see it as harsh words. I don't read it quite that way, but I guess in California Democrat land, they speak so ill of each other so rarely that this should be considered a big deal. It certainly does look like with poll numbers like that, Bob Filner's days are numbered. Although, as we've seen, you know, the initial reaction to the Wiener thing and Senator Larry Craig serving out the rest of his term, sometimes a politician caught in bad behavior decides to stick it out and just, you know, they're going to, you know, endure the public humiliation and endure the criticism and just, you know, serve the rest of the term. I don't think that's an option for Filner, but, you know, turning into a day-by-day more dramatic situation out in San Diego.
On to martini number two now, Jim, and we didn't talk about it in the Three Martini Lunch, but there was a big debate this week in the House of Representatives over a bill sponsored by Michigan Republican and really Libertarian Justin Amash that would strip from the NSA the ability to collect information about American citizens, their phone records in particular, without probable cause. We know about the PRISM program that collects all this information. They say they don't look at it unless there's a warrant that goes before the FISA court. Not good enough for Amash, and impressively large bipartisan group, but it wasn't enough to get the bill passed. It was ultimately defeated. But the debate continues now between Chris Christie and Rand Paul. Rand Paul was pretty actively trying to lobby members of the House to support this thing, even though it failed by 12 votes. Chris Christie is now out in Aspen at this Forum for Republican Governors, and as usual, didn't mince many words when talking about those who want to curtail the nation's surveillance powers.
This strain of libertarianism that's going through both parties right now and making big headlines, I think, is a very dangerous thought.
Senator Rand Paul, for example?
Well, listen, you can name any number of people who have engaged it, and he's one of them. I mean, these esoteric intellectual debates, I want them to come to New Jersey and sit across from the widows and the orphans and have that conversation. And they won't, because that's a much tougher conversation to have.
Now, Senator Paul's senior advisor, Doug Stafford, responded to that, saying that if Governor Christie believes the constitutional rights and privacy of all Americans are esoteric, he either needs a dictionary or he needs to talk to more Americans, because a great number of them are concerned about the dramatic overreach of government. And so, Jim, this could be a great debate between Fourth Amendment rights and the government's responsibility to protect us all, but it's getting a little too personal, a little too quick here.
This is a debate we really need to have. And I think this is a really good topic. And I think that, you know, bright people can come down on different sides of this issue. I think the way that they're arguing is pretty disappointing, considering how you could make the argument, look, we really need these programs, without saying, you tell that to the widows and orphans of 9/11 victims, pal. I mean, it really is kind of a you know, waving the bloody shirt argument there. And the idea, the implication there is that if you, you know, believe that the NSA program goes too far and needs to be reined in and needs to be limited in some ways, that somehow you don't care about 9/11, you don't care about 9/11 widows and orphans. This issue deserves better. And then the flip side from, like, look, I think, you know, Chris Christie cares about freedom. One of the fascinating aspects of this debate that is that it hasn't really broken down into a traditional left versus right split on this, Greg. You notice it basically is, if you have a security clearance or you've had a security clearance, you think the program is hunky-dory. If you don't, you're much more wary. So that's why most office holders, with the exception of Rand Paul and a couple other senators, have kind of been that basically there are a whole bunch of people who are involved with the program on the intelligence committees, and they think it's going okay. But I think there's a very strong argument to be made that, one, this is not necessarily what the country signed on for when it passed the Patriot Act back in 2001. Secondly, our behavior of how we use cellular phones, how we use the internet, how we use texting, all these other metadata, there's a lot more in it now than there was during the passage. And this is definitely worth reevaluation. I'd kind of lean with the folks who are making the Amash argument is, look, if you're collecting all the data and then filtering through it to look for bad guys, and you're collecting a lot of data on people who are not suspected of any crime, well, it kind of obliterates the concept of probable cause. And that's always been a fairly important deal in America, going back to the concept of the general warrant. You know, the British troops used to not need any reason to look around in your house. They didn't need to say, look, we think a crime has been committed here. They said, yeah, I feel like looking around, and that's part of our authority. When you have the NSA basically asserting we can only act upon it if we think there's probable cause, that's still getting into a very gray area. And it's so a topic that really deserves a good debate is, at least so far, kind of being underserved by the words of Christie and Paul so far.
All right, on to martini number three now. And a lot of you may have heard in the last couple of days that Caroline Kennedy, the daughter of the late JFK and Jackie O, of course, is about to be nominated to be the next U.S. ambassador to Japan. This is a position that has gone to pretty prominent people in the past. Former Vice President Mondale served in that position, I think, for Clinton. Tom Foley's had it. He was former Speaker of the House. Howard Baker. Kennedy, of course, not really having any specific political background of her own, or as far as I know, much dealings with Japan. But it goes down to what John Fund has written for the National Review as a trend in the Obama administration of using ambassador posts to reward political allies. He says that normally about 30% in recent administrations of those ambassadorial posts have gone to political allies. 70% have gone to actual diplomats. Now, in the Obama administration, in this second term, more than 56%, according to the Los Angeles Times, he writes, of Obama's ambassadorial nominations have been political compared to diplomatic. So, Jim, I don't think this is a huge surprise to anyone. How upset should we be about this?
The scale of it in the Obama era is kind of surprising. One of the pledges back in 2007, 2008, of the Obama team was, look, we are not going to put people in there because they're political donors. We're only going to select our nominees based on their qualifications and merits for the job. Back when Anna Wintour, the editor of Vogue, was being mentioned as a potential candidate to be U.S. ambassador to either the United Kingdom or France, I and a couple others kind of scoffed. What does the editor of Vogue know about U.S.-UK relations or U.S.-French? I'm sure she's up to speed on French fashions and such, but traditionally that's not really what a U.S. ambassador is supposed to handle in these sorts of things. You've always had a certain ambassadorships that were meant to be, you know, given to wealthy donors. And, you know, Luxembourg, a fine little country. Sorry, you've always gotten these kinds of you know, wealthy donors being sent out there. It's basically a paid vacation. That basically, you know, some wealthy donor gets to feel really important for a couple of years, living in an embassy, an ambassador's house, and all that stuff. And having been part of or at least you can say closely connected to the embassy community back when I was living over in Turkey. I understand there's a lot more than just an ambassador in an embassy, so generally the professional staff, the diplomatic staff, can contain the damage of an ambassador who is appointed who has no background in the country, no special knowledge of it, no experience, nothing that they're doing there. But sometimes it can be a fairly big deal, and we have had, I believe it was the Czech Republic, and Michelle Malkin has a piece in the on NRO today about an ambassador to the Caribbean who basically didn't do anything while she was there and spent a lot of time bringing Magic Johnson to the islands instead of actually doing the traditional work that an ambassador is supposed to do. This is a bothersome trend.
Yes, you've always had certain ambassadorships that tended to get this, but you know, a country like Russia or China or the, you know, or for that matter, Turkey always tended to get a big professional representative of the United States, somebody who knew what they were doing because that position actually had real responsibilities and consequences. Japan had turned into a place where you generally put old democratic politicians. As much as people might like Caroline Kennedy, she has really absolutely no connection to Japan whatsoever, other than maybe eating sushi a couple of times. So why her and all that stuff? And the general defense was, well, look, Walter Mondale didn't know a lot about Japan either, and he was a good ambassador out there. Apparently the Japanese are very happy with this, so I guess that's the good news. They're as swept up in the Kennedy mystique as anybody else. I look at this and I'm glad I'm not a diplomat, because how frustrating would it be to work your butt off your whole career, kind of hoping someday to be an ambassador, and you get beat out by somebody because they gave the president a lot of money. And I think it's kind of a bad trend. I think we should understand that as much as you're always going to have some of this in Washington, you should try to keep it to the minimum, and you should try to keep it to countries that are not strategically important. Now, China and Japan have been having a lot of tensions lately, and I remember thinking, I'd love to see at the you know, confirmation hearing, Ms. Kennedy, please explain to us your views on Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's view towards the islands they're fighting with there. Kind of expose her for not knowing much of anything unless right now they're briefing the heck out of her between now and then. It should be frustrating. It should be disappointing. It's understandable that certain ambassadorships are going to end up being appointed, you know, used as ways to reward donors. But after a while, it really gets to be a unacceptably, you can't treat certain countries and use them as, you know, plum positions and ways to reward donors. It's not a goodie bag. It's not a swag bag. We need actually good U.S. diplomats. And as, you know, no offense to Caroline Kennedy, I just see nothing in her background suggesting she'd be good for that job.
A lot of people would agree with that. But I'm also guessing she'll be easily rubber stamped by the Senate. Nobody wants to put up a huge fight over Caroline Kennedy, would be my guess. But we'll see. Jim, have a fabulous time on the cruise. I'll actually talk to you in about 2 weeks. Have a great time.
Everyone enjoy our absence, because we will.
Jim Garrity of National Review headed out on the National Review cruise. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. I'll be back next week for the 3 Martini Lunch, and then the week after we'll be on a brief hiatus when we're both away. But please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.